Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Near and Queer to My Heart podcast. As always, I'm your host, Amanda G. So excited for this episode. We have an amazing guest, Denise Winkelman. Denise is a stand-up comedian, actress, fitness model, screenwriter, and former pro wrestler. Like, how cool is that? The wrestling world is so interesting and fascinating to me, and I love that she was a part of that. It was really amazing, and she talks all about it, and we get to hear about what I love is it's characters. And it's fun. Like she said, it's silly and it's fun. And she was so happy to have been a part of that. You know, wrestling, it teaches you a lot. It teaches you discipline. It teaches you how to move your body. It teaches you how to be in a crowd, to perform. So it's really cool to see how that translated into later a stand-up career, into acting, into modeling, into screenwriting, into all these other things. So it was really exciting to talk to her. Also, stay tuned at the end of the episode. Denise was nice enough to share a clip of her stand-up, so we'll play that for you after the interview, after you get to know her a little bit, then see what she does on stage. It's awesome. Before we get into the episode, of course, as always, the announcements. We'd love to see you on social media. Queer to My Heart on Twitter, Near and Queer to My Heart on Instagram and Facebook, and maybe one day we'll learn how to use TikTok. That day is not today, so connect with us in other ways. We have some merch at teepublic.com. TEEpublic.com. We always have new designs, so come and check that out. And we'd love to chit chat with you for a little bit. I hope everyone's doing well. I feel like in the post-COVID times, instead of saying, how are you, which is what I've, you know, talked about in previous episodes, I'm trying to find a new way to check in with people. I realize what you say is, what are you watching on Netflix? Apparently that's how we're all connecting now, because there's all shows that we're watching and sharing and connecting in that way. So I guess I'm told that's the new small talk. So I'm gonna try that out. I tried before the Oscars to watch a bunch of the Oscar movies, and Minari was amazing. If you have a chance to check that out, I would highly recommend it. And if you want to fuck your life up, there's this short film on Netflix. 12 minutes. It'll fuck your life up. This 12 minutes will ruin you for a day. It's called If Anything Happens, I Love You. And I don't want to say anything about it other than get up. I'd say 3 boxes of tissues. It was intense, but it's good and therapeutic and something that I think, you know, we need to see. And it won the Oscar for Best Animated Short. So that doesn't motivate you. And if you already have Netflix, it's free. I don't know. The Oscars was weird. That was weird. I understand they had to make some changes because of COVID. They didn't have to change the order of things. There's a reason this is the 93rd Oscars, and 92 out of 93 times, you know what they did last? Best Picture, because you want to end it on a high note. Everything else, all the other awards lead up to what's Best Picture, what's overall Best Picture. This year, they said, no, we're going to spice it up. So we'll do Best Picture, then we'll do Best Actress, then we'll do Best Actor. And that would have been fine and dandy, but Best Actor was Anthony Hopkins. Great. I didn't see The Father. I heard it's wonderful. He wasn't there. It's fine if he's not there. Okay, maybe you could pre-record a speech or do a live stream. No. Okay, well, maybe send somebody else in. No, it just ended. They just were like, Anthony Hopkins won. He's not here. Thank you. And then no closing number, no host to kind of riff. Lil Rel didn't even come back out. Glenn Close could have gone and done the butt again. Something. No, they just ended it. So that was really weird. But I guess it makes sense with the past year that we've had that that's what they're going to do. So I don't know if you saw the Oscars or saw the highlights. That's my version of them. Happy to be here. Happy to be talking to y'all. Love connecting with everybody. And thank you again for listening and spending your time with us. Because our guests, and Denise did this, our guests just share so much with us. And they open up their hearts and their souls and their past. And they really open up their world to us. And I appreciate that so much, and I hope you all do too. So without further ado, doesn't that sound like the Oscars should have sounded like? Let's get to it. Let's get to Denise Winkleman. You are a stand-up comedian, writer, actress, model. Did I get all the things?
You got all the things. Former pro wrestler, like complete hussy. Like it's all in there somewhere.
Yeah, I was going to get to a former pro wrestler. Complete hussy. We'll put a pin in that. We might, we might need to have that in our wrap-up at the end.
Of course.
I know you're in Los Angeles now, right?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. I moved from Denver 2 weeks before the pandemic started.
Oh.
So I planned it out. I started stand up 3 years ago in 2017, so 3.5 right now. And I started in Denver. I was fortunate enough to do several festivals during that time, met some really great folks in LA, always wanted to move, planned it out, and I moved it February 20th. And then 3 weeks later, everything shut down. So it has been a challenge so far.
Was it... I guess, are you happy that you moved, or are you like, if I knew what I knew now, I would have stayed and waited? Or are you like, now I'm in LA and that's the dream and the goal?
Well, LA has definitely been the dream. It's weird because so many things are up in the air right now where, you know, a lot of comics have moved out of LA. A lot of actresses have moved out of LA because other places are filming. And so they really don't know what the entertainment industry is going to look like. Overall, I'm happy with the move. I'm disappointed that I really haven't been able to go out and explore or really make connections and really perform live stand-up and check out some of the amazing clubs in Los Angeles. But some things have worked out. Being able to do Zoom shows and get to meet comics from kind of all over, but a lot of comics in LA. I do feel like I have better connections than when I started, which is really fun.
So I'm originally from LA. I left there when I was 18 and I have never moved back. And I go back to visit, at least before COVID. And when I would do shows, people would be like, oh, come back next month. Or, you know, when you're going to be here, let me know. When are you going to live here? You can let me know. And so even just having that address is going to be huge when all of this knock on wood ends soon.
Yes, exactly. Let's hope it's not too long, and it doesn't seem like it'll be that long. It's just like, I keep telling myself, it's just like getting through and kind of powering through, and it'll be good. So I'm excited. And some things have worked out. I mean, just having a lot of mutual friends, I was able to get in at Flappers. So I passed at Flappers and I've been being booked regularly there. And that kind of led to their helping with the Boston Comedy Festival this year. And because they had seen me and I had been in front of them, I was able to get accepted to Boston, which is kind of a big deal. So I'm excited for that.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thanks. It should be fun.
Yeah, I've heard Boston's a good comedy, like a really good one where everybody, you know, there's certain festivals where you go there and you feel like it's summer camp.
Yes. And you never know, like a lot of festivals claim that they're going to have industry or they're going to have bookers. And I had a fellow comic tell the story that she did a festival in Iowa and the booker was the bartender and she went up twice in the same night to the same crowd. And it was like essentially a 3-day showcase and that they just didn't have any clue what was going on. And so you never know what you're going to get. But I think these large, reputable festivals that draw kind of big names, you have a pretty good shot. And what really led to that, when I auditioned at Flappers, the booker there suggested I take a branding seminar, which was $25. And because the co-owner of Flappers, but she also helped out with this festival and helps as a college agent, was essentially the teacher. And she really encouraged us to apply to Boston because there was going to be a lot of industry because it was via Zoom. So a lot of, you know, industry television folks, they were going to watch a lot of the shows. So I'm on pins and needles. I'm excited for it. So fingers crossed it leads to something.
Yeah. I mean, it's an opportunity, you know, opportunities right now are few and far between. And to have one with industry and with that kind of exposure, that's great.
Yes. Very, very, very excited because, I watched something with Jerry Seinfeld. I think it was Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. And he just said, how are you going to get in front of people? Like, you have to figure out a way to get in front of people. And there are a lot of ways to do it, but like, nobody is going to come knock on your door.
Yeah, and that's the hard thing because we're all stuck at home and trying to figure out what our creative spaces even are and if we still quote unquote have it.
Yes.
Yeah, I did my first live show at a park. It was put on by the New Orleans Downtown Development people. So they made it as safe as you could be during COVID. It was a limited, you had to sign up in advance, only a certain amount of people could come. The chairs, they actually measured the space out, and then they had a safety ranger there that was enforcing masks and social distancing and everything like that. So it was all of us comics basically spent the first 2 minutes of our set just thanking everybody for being there and letting us talk in front of them. And the audience afterwards, literally 10 people came up to me out of like 40 and were like, "Thank you for doing this. We have had nothing." And I'm like, "Oh, the way to get people to see, local comics was just to take it away from them."
Yes. Well, and by the time this all comes back, like when this comes back, people are going to be so excited to come out and see anything live. It's going to blow up, I think.
I'm trying to stay hopeful, and things like that are keeping me hopeful. Where I'm like, once this is over, I believe number one that it will be over at some point, and that once it is over, things are going to be different, but in this like good positive way where we appreciate the connection instead of being like, oh, I could go to open mic comedy, I can go to free comedy show with locals anytime I want, and then now people, haven't had that and they can't go anytime they want. So hopefully there will be that appreciation or at least 10 people in an audience.
Yes, exactly. And I think things, you're right. I think things are going to change, but I think it's going to all even out. So for one, so many places are closing, bars and restaurants, you're probably going to have, it's probably going to be more limited, just as far as space and opportunity to get stage time, but it's probably going to be a little higher quality at some points too, which can be good
Yeah.
and should be fun. And I think people are just going to be excited to see it. And honestly, like if you've ever gone to a stadium, like a sporting event or a concert or anything like that, which I'm sure we all have, but it's like you're within such a tight space of all those people. Like maybe this gives us pause where we're wearing masks, even after we get a vaccine, and we're just like a little more socially distanced, so we're not like just breathing all over each other all the time.
Yeah, when I think about, sometimes my mind, like I go back into not even comedy, just like hanging out and living my life. I was like, I probably did a lot of disgusting things that now with the COVID mindset, I'm like, I shouldn't have touched that. Maybe I should have let that drink go if I didn't know what was going on with it. Like,
Yes.
so I do think people will be generally safer. Those of us who believe that COVID is real.
Yeah, so half of us will be really safe and half of us are going to die of COVID.
Yeah, it's I
Yeah.
don't know. I'm in Louisiana right now, so.
I can only imagine. I grew up, so the places I lived, I grew up in northern Minnesota, and northern Minnesota is very, if you ever watch where Trump goes in Minnesota, it's always northern Minnesota, and that's where my family is. It's like within 2 hours of my family. So they're the ones that believe that immigrants are coming to take their jobs and their farms and things like that. And then I lived in Cincinnati, so right on the border of Ohio and Kentucky. That's where I was doing pro wrestling. I lived there for 10 years, and those are very, very conservative kind of places. So they were much, they're much different than Denver and Los Angeles. So they've been good moves so far.
Yeah, that's the thing too is I think when a lot of people think Minnesota, they just think Mall of America and then they just think Minneapolis, St. Paul. It's the same with Louisiana sometimes. People are like, "Oh, New Orleans." And it's like, but there's a whole other state outside of New Orleans that is very, very different.
Absolutely. Colorado is the same way. Outside of Denver and Boulder, it's very country, very mountain. There's a lot of farmland. So whenever you get out of the kind of the big cities, then it kind of leans a little more conservative or blue collar, and it's not necessarily bad. So I grew up in an area that's really lakes country. There were lakes all over, a lot of resorts. A lot of people would travel from Minneapolis to go fishing in the summer or go hunting in the winter. where they would go ice fishing in the winter. Literally, I'm not sure if you're familiar with ice fishing, but December, January, all the lakes freeze over with big sheets of ice because it's like negative 30 below. And people drive their trucks onto the ice, put a little shack on there with a heater, cut a hole in it, and then we'll fish that way. It is the craziest thing that I had no desire to do whatsoever.
Yeah, I've seen it on like there's a few commercials on television and in the media, but I've never had the opportunity to do it. Do you trust the ice that much?
It depends. So I've never ice fished. I've been in an ice fishing house one time. So normally it's pretty good. It's pretty good. When you get to a big lake, it's harder for it to freeze all the way through, or then it'll like warm up during the day and it kind of freezes at night where it's not as cold. So every year there are people that kind of fall through the ice because they will try to go out in March or February after it's been like 30, 35, 40 degrees and the ice just isn't thick enough. So usually it's stupid people that are taking a chance. Actually, one of my friends in high school, they would snowmobile and they were going across the lake on a snowmobile and the ice started breaking apart and they ended up doing about like 10 or 15 feet just on water and they ended up getting back on the ice. But they were like, yeah, that was kind of crazy. We looked down, it was just open water.
Oh my God. See, some people get a thrill out of that. I get a panic attack out of
You couldn't pay me enough to take.
that. Why ice fishing? Is it like, are the fish better when they're like almost frozen? Is it the thrill of it? Is it just there's, nothing to do in winter? Like, I don't know how that came about and why that's so popular.
Yeah, so personally, I think it's just rural areas, and in those areas, if you're going to live in northern Minnesota where it's cold the majority of the time, I mean, you get like June, July are pretty warm. The August is fairly warm, and then it starts cooling down. But it's like mid-June to mid-August where you can actually go swimming and things like that. But it starts to cool down like right at the end of September. And it will stay fairly cool until June. And so it's a long winter. So I think people are just looking for stuff to do. And I mean, really, there's go to church or there's go to the bar. There's not like a ton of sporting events outside of high school sports or college sports. And there's just not like a lot really going on if you're not outdoorsy. But yeah, it was fun. Like, there's a reason I don't go back. I went back for Christmas a couple years ago and it was negative 5 for a high all week. And literally it was between going home for Christmas or going to Vegas. And I was like, I chose the wrong one.
Yeah, I was like, Vegas is whatever temperature Vegas decides it is.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, so with me, I lived there my first 23 years, lived in northern Minnesota. My parents are still up there. If you look at the coldest place in the country from December, January, like that's typically about 10 minutes from where my parents live in Minnesota. They call it the ice box of the nation. So I grew up conservative Christian. My dad's an evangelical pastor in a small town, and it just didn't feel okay to be different. And I knew I was trans from an early age, even though maybe I couldn't have verbalized it at that point. And I just made a conscious choice to try to make it go away because it didn't feel like it was going to be okay. So I got really into basketball. I played a year at a small Christian school in basketball. And then I got into wrestling because pro wrestling was really hot at that time with The Rock and Stone Cold and D-Generation X, and all my guy friends were really into it. And I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. And I learned that there were schools where you could go and learn to be a wrestler. And I did a bunch of research. I actually sent handwritten letters to a lot of these places or emails. And there were, I think there was one in Memphis, there was one in Cincinnati, there was one in LA, one in Boston. And the people in Cincinnati were really cool. And they gave me kind of the background who had been produced out of there. And it seemed like kind of a cool, affordable place to learn. And so I picked up and moved across country when I was 23, and I did pro wrestling for 5 years. So that was my break into the entertainment industry, where I always say, like with comedy, you got to learn to fall on your face. And that was really my time where I learned to fall on my face and like fail at a lot of stuff entertainment wise.
What was your wrestling name?
So this was before transition. So I wrestled as Dr. Melvin Winkleman, which is like a mad scientist, which was absolutely horrible. Like I hated doing it at the time. What really happened was, it's kind of hard to explain in that there were two wrestling promotions in Cincinnati where people started from. One place had an old contract with WWE to train guys. It was the HWA, and they would get paid to train guys under WWE contract to get them ready for TV. And the NWF was kind of the alternative. So HWA was very athletic based. The NWF, the Northern Wrestling Federation, they were more Southern style. They did a lot of shows in Northern Kentucky, and they would produce really big crowds. And it was very promo based, very entertainment based, very kind of, they'd have silly gimmicks and they would talk shit to the crowd. And like it was kind of fun in that standpoint. And they produced a lot of people going in that had wrestled for Impact and wrestled for Japan. So what happened was, my first day of wrestling school, I meet one of their big kind of trainees at the time, but people could tell he was going to kind of be a big deal. He wrestles as Carl Anderson now. And Carl Anderson became one of my really good friends. He always thought it was funny because I was somebody that had to work at being an athlete. I was very good promo-wise. Like I could cut a really intense interview. I just thought it was fun. And he was like, "Hey, like, why don't you, just to pop the boys, like, will you do a promo as a mad scientist?" And so I was like, "Okay, yeah," and I did. And for me, it was like, what do I really feel? It was almost like a bridge into acting, where it's like, well, here's a guy in his basement that, feels like he's an outcast for the world, and he's created like a potion where he's gonna raise hell on these people. And so I tried to tap into those emotions and then just add silliness to it. And I did it too well, where that became a thing, and that became my gimmick for 5 years. And you can't find many clips. So this was 03 to 08. So it was kind of before YouTube really, really blew up. So there's a few clips online, but there's not like tons and tons of clips. But some of the promos were really, really good. Some of the guys from that time who wrestled, one guy was John Moxley, who did some shows with us, who went on to be, he wrestled as Dean Ambrose in WWE.
Oh yeah, I've heard that name.
And he's in AEW now. He's AEW champion, which is on TNT. He was WWE champion, multiple time tag champions. Carl Anderson co-founded the Bullet Club in Japan. He was in Japan for 8 years or something ridiculous. He went to WWE with AJ Styles. He won the tag team championships twice. He's now moved on and he's in Impact. It was kind of cool to see everybody start off and then just a lot of people move up and do really cool things, which is kind of how I view comedy. It's kind of cool in the same way with comedy, is to start something and then watch people move up and go on to do really cool stuff.
But I grew up, my brother and my dad were huge wrestling folks, and throughout my life, for whatever reason, I always end up with friends who are into wrestling. I don't watch it regularly, but I'll watch it if it's on, and I love it. I know it's fake, but there's so many real elements to it. And once you click into that, because it's like, yeah, the stuff you watch on TV is fake too, but you're okay with that.
I don't know. I like the community of it. I always thought it's very cool to know that these guys are like pretty cool behind the scenes because they're doing the same stuff, but they go out and they just talk shit to each other. And like those realistic promos where they're just like talking shit or they're working together. Like, I love that. I did a promo on my old manager, who she kind of had heat at the time because she left in a weird way. So she was a pretty blonde girl, and we brought her back as a big fat guy, just to kind of spite her. And she was a friend of mine, and my boss at the time was like, "Go out there and cut a scathing promo. Just do what you want to do, but just make it really good." So I did this promo, and this promo's online, where it was like, She worked at Skyline Chili in real life, and I threw in like all these inside shots about how you haven't had one bowl of Skyline Chili, you're super skinny, you've never looked sexier, you must be on the Subway diet, like all this stuff. And I get to the back and people were all the guys were just like, oh my God, that was fucking awesome.
That sounds a little different than stand up.
It was very different, but there were still elements like physical comedy and, you're taking a chance with the crowd and trying to get them to react to something. You also have the thing where they've just watched a complete wrestling show. So they've seen, and we've all been trained by the same person, so we all kind of do it the same way, and we all know the same moves and stuff. So it's like, how do you really get people to care and buy into a story or buy into and react in the way you want them to? So I think there are elements that definitely helped when I started doing stand-up.
And were you a heel? That's the bad guy, right?
I did both. I started as a heel. One of the first big storylines I did was somebody gave us like lab coats and potion bottles or the beakers or whatever, and we put like Gatorade in it, like so it was like a red potion, and then we'd put like Alka-Seltzer or something, so it would like kind of.
A fizz.
Yeah, and I think one of the first big kind of feuds we had, like I cut a scathing promo and then I snuck into the ring and poured potion in a guy's eye and it blinded him. And so he had to wear an eye patch for like 3 months. So it led to a big street fight a couple months later where we just beat the fuck out of each other. But I was a heel and would get booed and like talk shit to the crowd. Over time, if you do it and you do something well, people start to cheer it. So they eventually started to cheer us, and then I think we turned heel again, and then so there were long runs and long periods where we kind of did both.
I mean, I always wondered for the heels because you're the bad guy. Everyone's yelling at you. And I've been to wrestling matches because WWE loves New Orleans. They're here all the time. So I've been to them. Truly entertaining. And when the heels get up there, people in the audience are just screaming, "Go fuck yourself, fuck you."
Yes.
Like they're so intense. And I'm always like, I know you expect it as a heel. Is there still a part of you that's like, stop it?
No, not at all. Like that feels really, really good. Like it feels really good when you got them like that, when you get them like really super invested into it. It's when they start cheering you because there are heel marks that will whoever comes out as a bad guy will automatically cheer you, and you're like, what the fuck? Like stop it. So the first actual wrestling show when I moved, it was literally I moved on like a Thursday or a Friday. I meet all these like wrestlers, and Carl Anderson, guy who became Carl Anderson, he wrestled as Chad Allegra at that time. He was like, "No, hop in the car. We're going down to Kentucky on Sunday. We're going to a town called Glensboro, Kentucky, which is in the middle of nowhere, and they do a wrestling show." So we hop in the car, like they're like, yeah, you'll be security, like you'll just, like hang out. And so Glensboro, Kentucky, it's like you go off the main highway and it's like way off the highway, and it starts to get right into the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains, and you're driving like on a two-lane road. In my mind, it's like a dirt road, but I know it's not really a dirt road.
Yeah, I'm picturing like no light, like at night it's just your headlights.
Exactly. It's like Ozark is really how it felt, like you're driving in Ozark. And all of a sudden, like there literally are people who are going to be at the wrestling show fishing in a creek that you pass by. And then you go, and then all of a sudden there is one gas station that is a restaurant and a bar and a gas station, and they have a wrestling ring in the back. And so every Sunday night at this time, they would do a wrestling show, and they would draw 200 people every night.
Wow, the whole town.
Well, not even the whole town, but people from the hills, because there was nothing going on. And so they would do, they had a good guy door and a bad guy door. And if you came out the bad guy door, they would naturally boo the shit out of you. If you came out the good guy door, they would cheer you no matter what happened. And this place was crazy, but so they sent me out to do security or whatever, and I'm like meeting the other wrestlers and stuff. And an African American guy came out the bad guy door. This is in the middle of nowhere in Kentucky. So I remember distinctly, so he got the shit booed out of him. I heard every racial slur you can possibly imagine.
Oh no.
And there was a family, so a mom with a baby, maybe a 10-year-old kid and an 8-year-old daughter, so a 10-year-old boy and an 8-year-old girl. All of them were flipping the dude off. None of them had teeth. The mom was holding the baby's middle finger. It was fuck you, racial slur, and all of them were saying it. So I got home that night and I told my parents, I called my mom, and I was just like, yeah, everything we said about Kentucky was true. But so it got so bad, they were genuinely scared for that dude. So they decided to turn him into a good guy. And so like 2 weeks after that, as soon as he came out the good guy door, like people loved him. He could have ran for mayor. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Wow. Yeah, because that could have been a very scary situation.
Yeah, and in those places you assume like wrestlers are going to help each other out, but like I've seen some of those Southern boys like take it too far, and they got their ass kicked by like a big group of fans and stuff. So you always want to be careful. Like in my mind, it was always like, this is supposed to be fun, but like old school wrestling, like it was pretty common. Like in the 60s and 70s, like they would not let anybody know it wasn't like a show. And I heard about guys who would like there was a guy named Freddie Blassie who. He was like the first bad guy in Alabama, the first guy who did like kind of modern heel stuff. And he came out, and this is the 60s in Alabama, and he said, "I side with the African Americans, and all you white trash pieces of shit need to shut the fuck up." And those guys like wanted to kill him. Like they had guns, like he got
Wow.
stabbed. It was yeah, there was some crazy shit that went on there.
Wow. So I was going to ask this question before I heard that story. But what was the, so you did wrestling, you said 03 to 08, about 5 years. So what was the decision to leave that life?
So there was a couple things. One, it wasn't really paying. There wasn't like a ton of jobs at that point. We were coming off like a really hot period in wrestling with the Attitude Era. And what happened was like there was a lot of promotions went out of business. There wasn't a lot of places to make money. There wasn't like a ton of TV. You had to be really, really either exceptionally talented or really, really big. Like totally jacked to really make money. So that was part of it. But the other part was in my heart, I knew I was going to transition. Like I knew there was something different. So I ended up getting married and starting to work in finance, use my college degree. And it just became like a not a priority. And in a way, I was really preparing to transition, which, trying to do one last ditch effort not to transition. And, it really became obvious that I had to. So I quit wrestling. I decided I was going to transition. I got a divorce, and then I moved to Denver, and that's when I transitioned. And after I fully got through what I wanted to from a transition standpoint, then I started looking for a creative outlet again, and that's when I started stand up.
Wow, so you went from wrestling 180 to finance and the married life, and then another 180 to stand up in Colorado and the transition.
It's been crazy. Like the transition was very heartbreaking. Like there was the marriage and she didn't want to be involved in it. And then there was like, I have to do this. And then it's a big deal, especially when you're trans, because you feel like you have to let people in, especially when you're changing genders, people are gonna notice. So like I had to start like coming out to like my wrestling friends and like my family. And one of the Kentucky guys, I sat him down, and he was a good dude, but he talked like it would say things like, "Oh man, damn dude." And sat him down, I was like, "Hey, I'm gonna change. I'm gonna transition and be a woman." And he was like, "Oh man, I thought you were gonna tell me something serious. Like you had the herpes or you had HIV or something." Like that ain't no big. Yeah, so they were actually pretty cool about it overall. What was really cool when I transitioned, I was working for a large finance company, and I found out on my way to move, I was the first person with this company to ever openly transition. So they put a lot of pressure on me in a way. And I was like, oh my God, I got to do this right. Like I have to make it good and make it make it work kind of thing. But there were some good, really good things that happened. So I went from in Cincinnati, I was working at a site that had about 6,000 people, where it was really siloed, like you didn't really know a lot of people unless you worked directly with them. And when I moved to Denver, they were starting a new site and there was only 75 people on day one. So you were kind of forced to become friends with people you normally wouldn't be friends with. And because of that, I fell in with this amazing group of just really diverse people. Like my core group of friends was like, there was a straight couple that were ex-Mormons from Utah, and the 50-year-old director who was like a gay man that grew up in the club scene in Toronto and then moved to Albuquerque and then moved to Raleigh and then moved to Denver. And he was one of the glue pieces, and he always wanted to go clubbing and like go see male strippers. That dude took me to my first peep show, which I can't believe I'm saying, and just like random stuff. But like the pretty blonde girl who's bisexual. And then there's all these other people that I met because of my time in Denver that really were super supportive. And I don't think I would have got that if I would have stayed in Cincinnati.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, when you have an office with 75 people, you at least need to know people's names.
Yes. And by the time I left, so I left in 2020, I mean, I had worked with the company for 12 years. I had been in Denver for almost 7, and they had 1,000 people that worked in that office at that point.
Wow. So you were in at the ground level.
Ground level, but like the people I really talked to and hung out with for the most part had all started around that time, had been with the company for a while. And it was kind of crazy. Like my first team, in that new site was there was a straight guy from New Hampshire, a straight girl from Boston, a family Christian guy from Texas, a family Mormon guy from Utah, and then like our manager at that point, we were like one of the top teams in the country, and we it was just like you guys are going to be friends. Like this is what it's going to be. I think wrestling taught me this, but yeah, so I kind of live by the philosophy, have high aspirations but low expectations, which I stole from a colonel in the army. So if there's something you want to do, like set a goal, set a stretch goal, and then just work really, really hard to achieve it. And you'll never be disappointed. So if there's something I wanted or felt like would make me happy, like I've always been able to do that. So it looks a little bit gypsy-ish if you look at my story with doing the wrestling in Cincinnati and then transition and then moving to Denver and doing that and then starting stand-up. In between there, I tried to come back after I transitioned to a wrestling place in Colorado. And I was almost 40 years old, and I was just like, this hurts way too much. They wanted me to be like China, and it really wasn't what I was good at. Like I'm like a good talker. I'm good at making other people look good, and it really wasn't what I wanted to do. So I was like, I really need this creative outlet. I've been told for a long time, like, oh yeah, you really should do stand up. So I wrote a set, and there was a trans support group. And I just said, hey, I'm thinking of doing stand up. I was telling somebody. And he said, well, we're doing a fundraiser. It's at the big nightclub Tracks. We're expecting a huge crowd. You want to do 8 minutes? And I was like, okay. So my first time ever doing a set in stand up was 8 minutes in front of 300 people.
Wow, how was it?
It's actually good. There were pieces that I used on showcases for a while, like, and then I'd go away and then I'd kind of bring them back and adjust it. But overall, it got a lot of laughs. I think if you look at what I did, like, I paced a little too much. I was definitely nervous and like I shook the mic, but the overall material was decent and it gave me the confidence to kind of come back and keep doing it.
Yeah, so when you go in, you're all in.
Yes, yeah. Well, and I will say that probably of all the things I've done, writing has been pretty good if I'm writing about something I'm familiar with, and stand up is the other thing. So I kind of relay it to being like in baseball or like football. And a lot of times, if you're a really, really good player, you're not like a really good coach because you can't really teach it. The good coaches usually have to work to be good at something. And with wrestling, I definitely had to work at it. it took me a while to get pretty good at that. With basketball, I was the same way. Like, I had to really work to be good. With stand-up, I was fairly natural, like, as a writer and, like, with some of the material. And it was one of the kind of more natural things I've ever done. What changed with stand-up was when I moved to L.A., I was like, this is really going to be it. I'm going to not be employed for a while. So I'm really going to put a lot of time and effort into this and really turn it into something, because it's hard when you're working a full-time job. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's hard to be out till 2 in the morning and then try to get up at 5 in the morning to like go to work or whatever it is. And so that was the goal when I moved to LA. Pandemic kind of threw a wrench into that. But once I got over like the second surge and like not really knowing people and that kind of loneliness, I started being booked on Zoom showcases and places like with Dat Fan and, you know, Flappers and like Boston and some of these places. Getting to do some of these cool showcases, it really put an emphasis where, hey, like I have to write every day. Like, I have to find that creative space and just write, and I just have to do it every time. And it's like, for the first time in stand-up, I'm really treating it like being a professional, and it's just starting to show signs that it might pay off at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, that's what all of us, you know, said is like, oh, well, if I only had more time, and with the pandemic, they're like, all your shows are canceled,
yes.
At least for the first few months. So here's the time. Take the time. Your friends aren't going anywhere. You're not going on vacation. And so, you know, some people were able to use that time to really get creative in this way or in other ways. But yeah, we didn't have that excuse, I guess. At least for me, I didn't have the like, oh, I'm so busy. It's like, well, now you're not. So get to it. It also, I don't know for you, for me, when COVID happened, it made me really want to scrap all my old material and kind of start fresh. Versus I had been pretty consistently, you know, I was running a weekly show, 2 monthly shows, and then going to mics and other shows all the time, that I always was like, I don't have time to really develop a whole new, I developed new bits, but I didn't have time to like really put it together into like a longer set. And then when COVID happened, since a lot of my jokes, number one, became outdated right away, because those things weren't happening anymore, so you couldn't really talk about it. So I had the time. I wasn't just going to shows and just had to do what I could. I was like, I can now take the time to kind of develop this in a new and a different way.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, for me, I knew I wanted to write. So what was really going on with me was, I think there were two things. So one was, I was still writing on, originally wrote a movie called The Authentic Step. And I wrote it with my now roommate, who was one of my friends I met doing stand-up and comedy. And it's a dramatic movie. And we brought in like another writer to help us with some of the structure stuff. And we kind of developed it together. And so we wrote it, and then we eventually adapted it into a television pilot. But when COVID first started, we were just finishing that up and starting to enter that in festivals. And for me, like, I start a project and then I get like obsessed with it. And I felt like that kind of took away from stand-up. But then also at the beginning of COVID, people were just trying to figure out the Zoom comedy. And we were all just hopeful that it was going to, oh, this is going to be a month and then we're going to get back to doing shows. Mm-hmm. And so over time, like more Zoom shows, more Zoom mics have become kind of a bigger deal. The second piece was I met Dat Fan, and I mentioned him a couple times, mm-hmm. but Dat started running a comedy club essentially in his living room, and he would book all these comics. And I've been fortunate enough to be booked fairly regularly with him, you know, at least like once a week or a couple times a week, and doing, you know, like even some speed round mics. And, you know, it's essentially for him to stay sharp. So that dude won Last Comic Standing. He's like a theater touring comic, and he's great. Like, he's probably one of the most talented comics I've ever seen. And to be able to watch him do a set consistently has, for one, and it's like never the same set. So it really pushed me, like, well, I can't just bring the same stuff to his shows, to his mics, like, all the time. Like, I really have to develop new material. And there have been some trials and errors and, like, trying to figure out, like, what do I write about? So, like, I'm in the process now of just writing a lot about me and trans and societal stuff and, like, pieces about my life. But that really pushed me. And I feel like over the last few months, it took me, like, almost over a plateau where it's, like, you know, I probably came in with 20 minutes of material, and you know, now I have 20 new minutes that I would be very comfortable doing it that I didn't have before COVID started.
And that's great. That's fantastic.
And I'm also like bad where it's like I do something a couple times and I was like, yeah, that was fun. Like I want to go do something new. And I you know, like I'll write pages and notes and it's like, okay, how do I try this out? How do you know, like it's just like kind of figuring out your process and all that good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's next for you? What's coming up?
I will touch on one thing real quick that I didn't mention in my story. So I did, like I said, like anything pops into my head, I really want to do it. And I wanted to build my social media. So in 2018, I did a lot of fitness modeling shoots. I was working out really hard. So like I entered all these kind of online branding contests. And I did really well in the Maxim cover model search. I finished third in my group, so I didn't quite advance to like their semifinals, but like I had a very good showing and I have a lot of fitness modeling posts and stuff. So that was fun. And I definitely enjoyed that. As far as what's next, so we are our pilot, we've entered into a number of competitions. We were a finalist in the Wiki Screenplay Awards. We were a semifinalist in the Big Apple Screenplay Awards, or the Big Apple Film Fest. And we were a semifinalist in the Females Rock Film Fest. And we were a quarterfinalist in a Los Angeles International Screenplay Awards. So we've done really well. And we've gotten a little bit of buzz. Like, it seems to have some interest. So we're very hopeful that turns into something. We really want to shoot a teaser for that. So we're kind of collecting donations at this point, too. So I don't have to sell a kidney to film, like, a sizzle reel, like, teaser, too. We got the bill of what it was going to cost. And it was, like, $12,000. I was like, oh, my God. And that was bare bones. So,
wow.
And we want to, if we do it, we want to do it right. So like that's one thing we're working on, just doing stand up. So you can check my Instagram at Denise_Winkelman, WINKELMAN. My Twitter is at Gypsy Comic. It'll have like all my upcoming shows, all my upcoming dates, but stand up's going to be a big thing. And yeah, those are the kind of the big projects right now.
That's awesome. I'm so glad that, you know, during COVID, you've been able to not only stay creative, but, you know, stay focused. And it sounds like you have a lot to look forward to coming up.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks so much. Yeah, definitely seems to be moving in the right direction. So we'll see what it turns into. But you just kind of keep throwing stuff against the wall and just work hard at it. And hopefully somebody sees something. It's been interesting. It really has with writing more trans material, because I was always, when I started, I didn't talk about being trans, partially because I was doing modeling. But I was like, when I first went out to LA, maybe 2 years ago at this point, I did a festival and I came back and I was like, I got to be real. Like, if I'm going to be on stage, I got to be real. So like my stuff right now is like very, very real about being trans and societal stuff. And it's really interesting, like the response and how, you know, I could even see it turning into like a one woman show or something like that. So it's kind of interesting to see where it all goes.
My parents are my harshest critics, but also I'm thankful that they still like listen to my stuff and they'll share my posts. And but he says that sometimes my comedy is I'm too scared. Like, because I, you know, especially when you're playing at like bars and just in random spaces, you know, I don't have my own crowd. You know, people aren't buying tickets to see me in the 3,000, you know, seat theater. So I'm playing at whoever's there. And so I do get a little scared about, you know, taking a political stance about, you know, I do talk about being queer and being Jewish, but I do it in a very like lighthearted way.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually written some stuff that I did at that one, my one show at 8 months, where I've been able to go a little deeper, and it you're going to have better comedy that way, because you're getting to the root of who you are and you're not scared, and the audience can feel that. And that's what they're going to connect with on a human level.
Absolutely. And I think it just sets you apart. Like when I first started doing comedy, like a lot of my first bits were about working in a corporate job and being single where everybody else was married. And there were some funny comments, like people thought it was funny, but they didn't know the real me. So like just bringing them along and, you know, being trans and like, you know, I talk a lot about how I pick on straight guys a little bit, but I try to do it in a fun way. And just because I have that interesting perspective where I pretended to be a straight guy for a long time and I feel like I know too much. So I try to take people along for those rides. But if you want people to really relate to you and connect to you, being real, and it's weird to do it at open mics in front of strangers that have no idea, but who are just mm-hmm. other comics. The thing I get now, and it'll be stuff I've just written, but it'll be about being trans. And like, I've been doing like flappers, open mics, just to do as many sets as I can. And, you know, I'll have comics be like, well, I don't know how I can follow that, you know, and,
nice.
It's kind of interesting from that experience. Actually, the best compliment where it made me stick to it and decide to write more. I did a show in Denver. I met a guy at the Comedy Store in San Diego. I had been booked at a guest spot and I came back and they booked a show in Denver and it was a very small crowd. It wasn't they didn't promote it, but it was three headline guys and like maybe 20 people in the crowd kind of thing. And I got up and the comics had no idea I was trans. And I just started talking about being trans and doing my set and doing my stuff. And I got done and they were like, okay, so we had to change the order because only one of us could follow you. And they were like, that was fucking real. And like nobody's that real on stage or whatever. So it felt kind of good.
Yeah, no, that should feel great. Queer visibility is so important because you're not only telling your story and putting yourself out there, but there could be someone in the audience that like you're going to change their life, you know?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It's I have two quick things about that. When I did a show in Denver where I did that, and a lady came up to me after and said her son was going to transition to female and was very grateful that I was so open on stage. And I actually just had another comic just a few weeks ago, I was on a show with, message me and tell me after that, because I was so open, that it gave them the courage to, they decided to transition because of that. So you just never know who's listening. And, you know, if you're in a conservative area or anything like that, if you're open and you're real, like you just never know how that's going to affect people and what impact you could have on them.
Yes, 100%. And that's how we're going to end the podcast, because I always want to end it on a high note. And those two things are amazing high notes. And I think that is a good point. We'll leave it positive. We'll leave it with a high, strong note going forward and hope for the future, because that's what we're hanging on to right now.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me. This has been a blast.
Yes, thank you so much for doing the podcast.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Talk to you later.
All right.
Please help me welcome to the stage contestant and Denise Winkleman, everybody. Let me hear it.
Beautiful hussies. Oh my gosh. So just so you know, if I advance tonight, I'm definitely going to celebrate by going to Disneyland. And I'm either going to celebrate by starting a big-ass fight at the food court, or I'm going to have an orgy with Chippendale, one of the two. Probably both. And a bit about me, I am transgender, I am divorced, and I am bisexual. So if you ask my parents, I've officially won the award for the biggest disappointment in the family. Well, it's actually a tie between me and cousin Jimmy, and Jimmy had a special relationship with some ghosts. My parents just refer to him as the go-fucker. And if you throw in the fact that my parents are hardcore evangelical Christians, and are from a very small town in Minnesota, our family reunions resemble an episode of the Jerry Springer Show. It's like, Betty is sleeping with Cousin Ned, and Denise is now a woman, so fuck her. And my parents are at a weird age. My dad, I get these weird text messages from my dad all the time. I got one last week that just said, bad news. I click on it, I start freaking out. It says, I have shingles and my eye is swollen shut. My response was, oh my God, that sounds horrible. I'm not sure what that is, but you should really stop letting guys finish in your face. You do not find it nearly as funny as you have been. I've received a lot of weird emails to his local prayer group. His entire church has some concerns about me. And I'm going to say a word that's kind of looked down upon in our community. I am bisexual. Is anyone else here bi? This is a comedy show in Denver. I feel like by just showing up tonight, that makes you a little bi-curious, right? Like, you might not be a 10 out of 10, but I bet you if you have a few more drinks, you might be a 2 or a 3. Just play with your friend's balls and see what happens. Okay, I won't pick on you, but if you give me the wink, we can play dress up after the show. I'll help you set up a grinder account, I promise. And when I say I'm bi, I am 99% in the girls. But every now and then, there is a hot guy with a ripped up tummy that walks by, and I'm just like, how you doing? Shh, don't talk, dude. We have something special. It's only good if you don't talk. I don't want to hear your nonsense about craft beer and sports. I want you to dominate me. I want you to take me. I want you to dominate me harder than Donald Trump dominates the entire Republican Party. Just lie to me and then make me your bitch. Switch teams. I mean, unless the guy was like Bradley Cooper from A Star Is Born, they need to know what I'm talking about because he's pretty and he has problems. He's an alcoholic, so he would pass out a lot and I wouldn't have to touch him much. That to me is perfect. And a lot of people think Danny Norman is great and it's perfect. And it is. I love it. But it isn't unicorns and rainbows. It's not the best thing in the world. I was recently with a beautiful woman, and I knew immediately by how she smelled and tasted exactly what she had for dinner. And it was SpaghettiOs. It was the most disgustingly erotic experience of my life. When she was struggling, I would have at least bought her dinner first. I feel like Taco Bell would have been appropriate. I made the mistake of telling some people I work with about that story, and now every time they see me, they ask me what I had for dinner the night before as they sing the Chef Boyardee theme song. They've also left a bunch of cases of SpaghettiOs on my desk. So on the plus side, I really haven't had to buy dinner in like 2 months.
Thank you to Denise Winkleman for sharing her world with you. Special thank you to Ryan Golub for creating our awesome, awesome theme music. Check us out on social media. We're on Facebook and Instagram at Near and Queer to My Heart, on Twitter at Queer to My Heart. We have merch at TeePublic, TeePublic.com. We have a supporter page. Check our liner notes out or our website. You can click there and just give us a direct donation. We pay for web space. We try to do what we can to have the best equipment, to have the best sound, to have all the social media stuff and be out there for you and be representing the community. So check us out, support us. We love you. We'll see you next time. Thank you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.